in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Starters Club Podcast, where we have just one mission: to inspire you by talking to ordinary people who are becoming extraordinary entrepreneurs. And now here's your host, Aaron Smith.
Hey, it's Aaron Smith of the Starters Club, and I just wanted to remind you that Master the Start is out. It is available. We just hit number one again yesterday on Amazon. I'm so excited. This is my book that's all about helping you get out of your own way and get your dream business started. And you can grab that on Amazon. It's available in Kindle version and print. You can go to bit.ly/masterthestart2 to grab your copy today. Thanks so much. And here's my interview with Tamsin Horton. All right. Welcome to the Starters Club podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith. And we're going to be doing another Tip Tuesday segment with you're kind of like becoming our regular, Tamsin, with Bouja De La, Tamsin Horton. We are doing a Blab podcast recording, and this is a topic that we've been getting asked a lot about because Tamsin has been on and we've been doing some discussions about law. And this particular topic has come up, if I can speak English, that would help. But Tamsin, welcome. Thank you, as always, for coming on this and talking to us about these topics.
Oh, you are so welcome. You know, this is what I love to talk about more than anything. And if it can save people a legal migraine later on, then that's what I like to do.
Absolutely. Well, and thank you to all those who have joined. And please ask your questions. We will get to them. I see we've got Chris Cerrone here. Thank you, Chris. Frank's here. Jonathan, welcome, guys. Thank you so much, Connie. And this particular topic, you're seeing this especially a lot with the Blabs of the world. And it's happened way before this, but even Periscope Blab, a lot of people are like, hey, I love what you do. I love what you do. We should have a course together. We should do an event together, where you're not actually starting a partnership, a business type of thing where you're separate entity, you know, or you're becoming one business entity. You're still your separate entities, but you're doing these joint ventures together. And I'm so interested to talk to you about this because then it becomes, how do you legally protect yourself, right? Without actually starting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah. It's like you want all the benefits of marriage, but you don't really want to get married. But then when something happens, it's like, well, what are you? Are you or are you not together in this thing?
Exactly. So let's talk about kind of the first things that you need to think about when you're starting to think about doing this with somebody. So you really like what they're doing. You really like what they're about. You think they seem like a pretty good person. You don't want to be a business partner with them, but you want to do something joint together. Mm-hmm. What should you begin to start thinking about before you step into that relationship?
What I always tell people is, really get specific on your why. Why do you want to do this thing, whatever it is, with this other person? What is it that you want out of it? Because there can be so many different reasons, but those reasons are what will kind of, because the path can go 100 different ways. And you have to know, what do you want out of it? Why are you doing this? Why do you want to partner up with someone? And they have to do the same thing and get really specific and keep your dialogue open. Like, this is what I want to do it for. And this is what the other person wants to do it for. That's first and foremost, because your next step, I'll kind of lead us in there, is you have to define what it is. You know, what is it you want to create? But if you don't know why you want to do it, then you don't know what to create. Like, is it going to be one person in charge, which we'll get into all the legal and the financial stuff, or is it one person in charge, but then I'm going to split the profits with the other person? Are there profits? Are there losses? Like, so that's where you start, is what do you want out of it?
Okay. And let me just say this first too. So there's affiliate marketing, which mm-hmm. is you send out to your list, I get, you know, whatever you sell, I'll give you a predefined amount.
Mm-hmm.
This is different though, where I say to you, hey, Tamsin, I'm putting together this course. I'd love to, this came up in our Blab this morning. Somebody got he got put into the course without him knowing about this.
Yes.
So this could be either, Tamsin, let's create a course together where you give legal advice, I'll give startup, or can you be part of a module? All of these different, and everything in between, where I'm using your content in either my course or our course. So should we start with the using your stuff in my course kind of partnership, and then go with something then that kind of becomes a little more labor intensive, where it becomes our course? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And that's a good place to start, because the easy, when you're running a course and you're bringing guest people in as guest contributors, and like I said, this is not affiliate marketing. Affiliate is something completely different, because in affiliate marketing, you are the legal entity responsible for the finances, for contracts. Like, you're just giving percentages of money. So that's an entirely different legal relationship. But when you're running a course, and like the person this morning on the blab that got their, you know, found out that their stuff was in someone else's course, one, that's a huge no-no. I can't just pull you into my course. So one scenario, I'm running a course and I want to use you as a guest contributor. So there, the big issues with that, first, having a guest contributor contract so that they're giving you permission to use their intellectual property, their copyright material. That's a big, big, big one. Really important. But then two, are you paying or not paying them? You know, some people, now that it's evolving and it's kind of, it's still so new to most of the world, but it's fairly common in the online realm. People are saying, you know, where they used to do it for free, now it's like, okay, you're going to make crap loads of money. I'm no longer content with exposure anymore. So it could be something as simple as, I want $50 to be a part of this, or I want $5,000. I mean, that depends, but those are the big pieces. But legally, the course person is the one holding the contracts with the buyers. The course person is the one responsible for the taxes. The guest person is concerned with protecting that intellectual property, the use of their intellectual property. And even more so, when things start to come out from behind the scenes of what you saw online wasn't really what it was, you want that ability as the guest person to be able to pull your content out of their course.
So you actually put that in the contract, like if I can change my mind at any point and ask you to remove it?
Yes, for certain reasons. Fraud is a big one. Misrepresentation, affiliate marketing practices that are violating the Federal Trade Commission, because not every online course person follows the affiliate marketing rules. And you don't want to get lumped into it. So yeah, that's the kind of stuff you put in your arrangement between yourself and the guest people that you're having. Again, it's keeping you safe in that kind of a relationship.
Okay. And Connie had a great question about, you know, online world opens us up to worldwide anything.
Right. You want to make sure that whoever is legally responsible for what is being sold, you're following their laws for sure.
Okay. And I was just going to ask that.
Yeah. You want to make sure, because that, and that's why it's so important to know who holds the legal responsibility. You know, we get into these things and suddenly, like I said, it's all fine and dandy until someone says, well, are you married or not? Like, married in the, you know, are you together in this or not? It's fine, honestly, when there's no money going back and forth, because nobody really cares. But when there's, as I tell people, you make $1 million, people care if you're together or not. And if you lose $1 million, people care if you're together or not. Not just the legal people, but the people involved totally care. So that's why it's really important to know, why are you doing the venture, so that you can define what it is. Oh, and I want to add too, as people are listening, like if this jogs your, like, oh, I wonder if this applies to me. Please, please, please find an attorney you can build a know, like, and trust relationship with, and ask them, because it's so different. This online world is, it's still the wild, wild west in terms of legal stuff. There are some basic principles, but especially when you're talking international and states and stuff, just make sure that don't just use a blab. You know, as I say, Google is not law school and live streaming is not, you don't want to put your business on the line with live streaming.
No. And someone's asking if this applies just to courses or if it applies to like interviews on blogs too. And it's my understanding that you just have to have permission that you can use the content for something like an interview on a blog. Is that right?
2 years ago, I would have said that's okay. Now, when you're taking guest contributors and you're putting it on your website, you want a guest blogger agreement. You want them saying you have permission to use my copyright material, you have permission to distribute it, because we're distributing it so many different ways. You don't want anyone to be able to come back and say, well, I didn't want you to share it here, or I didn't want it to go there. And people will say, well, everyone knows that. Okay, everyone knows it except for the one squeaky wheel that creates a law out of it. That's how why we have law. So it happens because people assumed things except for someone who then took it to a court case. So not just for courses, it's any time. And really, I think I need to shoot one to Aaron. I don't think I've shot it to you. I think I've totally forgotten. But like when I, for instance, was on other people's Periscope and I knew they were going to reuse it, I sent them, you know, like a quick blurb in an email that said, you have my full copyright permission. Use this, repurpose it. It's all yours. Now, I know I'm not going to go back after them. I know I'm not. But so that they are totally covered, I send it to them. Like, you know, when I'm doing podcasts or anything like that, if they don't send me something, I try to remember to send it to them.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So let's go into the area now where we're talking like business ventures together. So you see someone, you really like what they're about, and you say, you know what, I like what you're doing. Let's maybe create a course together or even an event. Let's do an event together. So you're not going to pay them to necessarily be a speaker or be part of what you're doing, but it's more of a let's do this together. Let's split the profits, however you determine that. But you're not setting up a separate entity together. So you're not a true business partnership. What are some things you need to think about? And how do you go about setting that up just to, you know, prevent any headaches later on down the line?
Yeah. You have to be very clear on legally who is signing the event contracts. And this is where it has to be one person that takes the legal responsibility, because you're signing, and this is what unfortunately happens, is you have two individuals, they're running an event, and one person is hiring catering and signing contracts, and one person is, oh, I'll do the venue, and they're signing contracts. Well, one, they're not signing as their businesses. They're signing individually, which is a huge no-no, because you just lost all the protection your business could possibly give you if something went wrong, which it does. People fall down steps, you know, and I mean, there's so many, we don't need to go there, but that's what happens. And that's in the practical sense. You take care of this, so you're signing things, you take care of that, you're signing stuff. Huge no-no. Huge, huge, huge no-no. You've got to have one person signing contracts as their business, which means one person is legally and financially responsible for that event. And then you can decide, okay, when the event is done and we've deducted expenses, then how are we going to split the profits? Or how are we going to split the losses? Like, what if you lose $1,000? Suddenly we love each other at the beginning, you might not be so lovey-dovey at the end. That kind of a thing. So you want to make sure you got to pick somebody, or you're going to form an actual partnership and run it as a business. Does that make?
Yeah, that's so interesting.
What you don't want to do.
Right. What about even the like course? Like if we wanted to put a course together and put it, obviously there's going to be some, does one person have to take ownership of kind of the insurance, the legalities of who this, so that's how you have to do it. So we say, okay, I'm going to partner with you. Everything's going to be under the Starters Club from a business perspective, but we're going to sign a contract where I'm going to give you 50% of these profits.
Right. And when you're doing that, what I tell clients is, you know, 50-50 isn't really fair when one person has to take the legal and the financial responsibility.
See, and I wouldn't even have thought of the whole legal person, all those little, I never would have, I'm so glad we're having this conversation because I wouldn't have.
Yeah. And I wouldn't have either before I went to law school. It's why I found business so frustrating because like we'd come up with all these ideas and then the lawyers would say, well, no, you can't do it. But they would never explain the why. It was just like, no, you can't do that. Okay, well, this is why you can't. Because in your course, a course, an event, a seminar, whatever you're running, you want a contract. And people tend to freak out when they hear the word contract. They're like, it's like, no, no, no. All it is it's a piece of paper that you're putting your expectations down in writing. So it protect, like if that's all it's doing is saying, hey, this is what you want. This is what I want. This is what you're giving. This is what I'm giving. So that once time goes by, you can look back at it and say, this is what we agreed to. So it's not, you know, people tend to think they're like these 50 page huge things and they're not, they're really not. But when you're running a course, you want people to sign and it can be click, you know, terms and conditions, just like we do when we update our phones or update iTunes or open new software, whatever it is. The course buyer is creating a legal relationship with the course seller. Well, the course seller in a contract has to have a business name. So it has to be Aaron and the Starters Club or Aaron and the Starters Club and Launching Legal. You know, if we did one together, that gets really, really messy where keep it with one company, but then say, you know what? The split should be 60-40. The split should be 70-30 because the person taking on the legal and the financial responsibility, that's not really 50-50 anymore. And that's where people hurt feelings start to come in is I'm taking all this responsibility and I'm giving half the money to the other person where if something happens, their name's not on this contract.
Well, okay. And Tick the Great has an interesting point. He says, if I can't do business with someone on a handshake, I will not JV or do anything with that person. I agree with that to an extent. I want to be able to where I'm like, listen, and Mm-hmm. I don't know you that well, Tamsin, but I'd feel like you are that person where if I said, let's do a joint venture together. And, you know, I said, you've got this part, I've got this part. I feel like it would be a pretty slam dunk, right? That you and I would both get our stuff done. But as someone who has been involved more real estate transactions than anything in business partnerships, it's all fun and games until one thing goes wrong. And even on a handshake, like, I mean, we're talking great people that I would trust with everything. And when an assumption is made, that's not correct. When something happens that wasn't expected, mm-hmm. you can't assume a handshake, even on the best intentions, on the best handshake, something can go wrong. And I think this is just one of those things, like, I feel it's so important when you're stepping in, this is a kind of watered down business partnership, but because it's not a business partnership, a lot of people don't feel they need the same legalities. And I just feel, especially with anything, it's so important to define who's doing what, who's expected of what. You have to do that to do anything successful in business. And this is just a little different. So it's like, okay, let's set these expectations. Who's going to be in charge of the marketing? Whose name is that? Okay, if we're running a Facebook ad for this, whose name is on the Facebook ad? You know, yes. I'll get likes from it, even if we're cutting, you know, we're 50-50ing the cost, they're going to see my name. My name's going to be the marketed one, even though you're going to get some of this course. It's little things like that.
Whose email list do people go on?
Exactly.
you know, it's all those minutia details that, you know, yes, handshakes are great. They're completely fine. But you can Google it, you know, Shark Tank deals that never, you know, once they don't make it through the vetting process, there's tons of handshakes. There's hugs, there's high fives, there's, oh, we can't wait to do this. But guess what? Those deals never went through because at some point the handshake is going to turn into, it always comes back to law and money. It always does. Who's on the line if this makes a million or 10 million or whatever, or even 100? Whose name is on the line if it goes the opposite direction? So it is, and it's trusting that other person. Like I said, you know, I send the release when I do stuff. I know myself, but you don't, you know, as well as we know each other. I want that person to have the peace of mind. It's like, okay, I believe in this enough. I'm going to put what I know needs to be behind this handshake because I value this relationship. I value this friendship. I want to make sure I'm doing everything I can to protect this handshake. I want to be shaking your hand 5 years from now. I want to be doing more stuff with you. And if you really value what you're doing, you back up the handshake because you value protecting it. That's how I see it.
I love that point. Okay, Jonathan's got a great question. What is legally enforceable as a contract, i.e. cocktail napkin, handshake, email? I'm going to let Tamsin or I may know this answer because I watched Nashville and I know this woman's husband was legally enforced to be part of the company because they wrote it on a napkin, but I don't know if that's just Nashville or if that's law. No. So I'm going to let Tamsin. No,
it's based, every law student, it's one of the first cases you read, in law school. It's in the first 2 weeks. It may be the first week. I don't completely remember the first week of law school. The guy sold the farm on a napkin. So yes, without sending everyone through law school, there are tons of people who have had to perform on contracts when they didn't know what they were signing, like a napkin, it hasn't come up yet because it's still so new, but I'm sure at some point someone will say a tweet was, obviously. Yep. Law and Order. Exactly right. You do total substitute for law school. Absolutely. Those cases that you see, that you hear about, you read about. Yes. Can things like a cocktail napkin be a, yes. Yep. High as a Georgia pine. That's exactly which one it is. They can end up being contracts and then being enforced. But with that aside, when you're running a course, when you're doing any of this stuff, it's going to be a traditional, you know, it can be electronic. That's what it's mostly likely going to be, is you have your agreement. This is what we agreed to. This is what happens if things go wrong. This is how we're going to fix it. And then people are signing it. So yes. Yeah. It's high as a Georgia pine. That's how the case is referred to.
Just be as detailed as you possibly can in all of these, because like I said, you never know. Should you get a lawyer involved in this, Tamsin, every time you're doing, or is a legal contract enough of define anything? I mean, I know you're going to say it's always safer to have a lawyer, but I mean, is it enough just to write up a contract and agree that what you agree on terms of payment and all that?
I put the link up in the feed because I have a how-to kit that's all these questions, because that's where you need to start. You don't want to pay a lawyer to sit and talk you through all this stuff. Like, that is a horrible use of your money, your time, everything. But you need to know what the questions are. So like the one that is / conference, it's conference, courses, retreats, events. Basically, I probably should rename it joint venture. But it started off as a conference thing. You want to know all those questions. And then once you've done, this is the person that's legally responsible. This is how we're splitting things. This is what we're doing. Once you know all of that, then the course whoever's going to be legally responsible, depending on the nature of the event or the course, if it's pretty basic, use a guided DIY template. You know, I have tons of them in Launching Legal for that purpose. Like, if you know what you're doing and it's not high risk, you know, it's not crazy amounts of money. It's not crazy liability, like that kind of stuff. If it's really what I call pretty just normal to the online world, which is 99% of it, you aren't going to need someone. But if you're doing things crazy, or you're doing, if you have questions, then get a lawyer, you know, then get somebody involved.
There's joint ventures from a perspective of, hey, can you sell my course for me? So, or let me do a webinar to your list and we'll split 50% of those profits. So there's that, which is a little different. Like, that's pretty easy to do. You don't need a contract for that. You can just set them up on your affiliate program. This is a little different. So this is, hey, let's do something together. Let's do a conference together. Let's make a course together. Or can, like we talked about earlier in the podcast, can I be featured on your, in your course? So it's my content in your course. And that's where you're working as kind of under a single business. That's how you're treating it, but you're two different businesses. So like we're saying, okay, Tamsin, I want us to work on this course together. So it's going to be the Starters Club. You're going to cover all the legal perspectives. I'm going to cover all the business perspectives. Yeah, it's a partnership, but it's not a business partnership because you're not starting a business. So that's what it's, I know joint ventures are, I know like words are interchangeable from, I know people call joint venture, can I be on your webinar and you sell it 50-50? I know joint venture is, hey, can we get do this together and move forward. So there's just different, I know. So, but it's not a partnership from a perspective of a business partnership where we're creating a new business together because we're doing things. Okay. But you were doing things together. We're just not creating a business partnership. So, but yeah, so it's not a, like, can you sell my program for me? This is, we're doing a program together, but we're not creating a business partnership to do it.
Can I add to that?
Yes.
Because that's more affiliate. And I caught the very tail end.
Yeah, that's exactly what affiliate is. But I know people call affiliates joint ventures.
You want to make sure, because this is where affiliate, joint venture, you know, calling, you know, affiliate, but calling it joint venture. The Federal Trade Commission marketing laws are huge. And if your affiliate violates any of those laws and you don't have a written agreement, an affiliate agreement for who you're bringing on to help sell your program, you are on the line. And it is serious stuff. So even an affiliate, even if you're using a third party, especially when you're using third party sites, make sure you understand, because they're not all the same. Make sure you understand the terms and conditions of the affiliate program, plugin, whatever it is you're using, that makes sure you are protecting yourself against when other people are selling your stuff. Because so like at the end of the day,
I was just gonna say, like using a JVZoo.com, like putting your stuff up there, they grab it and sell it. If they're not following Federal Trade Commissions, and they're, I could be in trouble for that.
Yes.
Yeah. So every person who like would Tick is saying like he'll get 10 JV partners, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So it's, you can't just say, hey, can you sell this program for me? You have to make them sign something that says you must follow.
I would. I absolutely would. And it's one of those that people say, well, nobody's talking about this. Okay. This is so new in the legal world. Like it's so new, but there are countries that are, there's embargoed countries. Like there's countries you can't have affiliates in because you're breaking national law. But it's hard to know, okay, do I have, because we're all on the internet, you know, I don't know how to research where someone's IP is bingeting and, you know, coming from. But if it's coming from an embargoed nation, yeah, you're like, you know, it's a guy, and I don't know what the status on Cuban cigars is right now, but similar to that, like, there's things you can't bring from other countries and sell, just like you can't have people in other places. Now, you can have affiliates. You can totally have affiliates. You just want to make sure that you have something that says they're not going to spam. They're not going to illegally take email addresses. They're not going to use deceptive practices. They're going to disclose. Like, there's so many pieces. You can totally do affiliates. Affiliates are amazing. I'm not saying don't do it, but if you're doing it just like, hey, sell my stuff. Cool. Yeah. Oh, high fives. This is great. Cutting checks. You have no idea the liability you're taking on.
Samson, I say this every time I talk to you. I love talking to you, but I'm like, damn. Because I affiliate for some people and I've never signed anything.
I know. And the larger, the people whose reach is very, very large, who have very, it could be large in quantity, it could be large in a dollar amount, you will see they are starting to have affiliate application programs for that reason, where people, they still might accept 100%, but they are screening people to make sure they're not located in a country that we can't do business with, that they are following FTC laws, because either everyone's located in the US or you're selling to the US. I have yet to meet someone who says none of my business touches the US. So you just want to make sure that they are signing things. Like, and it's just an agree. I agree to these terms and conditions. Like, it's a checkbox, just like we do with Apple or do with, I mean, we click them all the time, but there's a reason the person is making you click is so that if something happens, they're covered. Your business is so, so, so important that it's these little things, but once you take care of them, they're done. It's not like, oh, I got to update my Facebook ads. Like, it's not a continual thing, but yeah, affiliate, anytime money is moving, please have it in writing somewhere of what is going on, because, affiliates is a big one. And when you use a third party plugin or service, they are typically, well, they almost always are. They're protecting themselves.
Right. They're not watching out for you. They're not
necessarily protecting you.
Yeah. But as always, Tamsin, thank you. It's one of those, you know, like I said, I've been seeing it so much with the blabs, with the collaboration, and collaboration is great. I'm so all up about collaboration. Like, collaboration is an incredible thing for your business, but it's one of those things. It's all great and fun and awesome until that one thing goes wrong. Or like I said, this is where I found in real estate partnerships, until one assumption is made that's not correct. And it's like, well, I thought you were going to be working on this. Well, I thought you were going to be working. Or how come I'm doing 50% of the work and you're getting the whole list? Just stuff like that. It's all fun and games. So I love the perspective of, I'm so glad we did talk about the affiliate marketing thing, because I didn't know about that. But anytime you're going to get into event, you know, where even if it's a 90-10 split, doesn't matter, you know, make sure, or even just like the guest blogging, if it's you and it's 100-0, but you're just putting your name out there, make sure everything is in writing to protect yourself, like Tamsin said.
Because your blog, you might sell your blog. You know, I know someone who went through this where they bought someone else's website that's mainly a blogging site, and the blogger before didn't have who owned the content. And so past people said, well, I don't want the new person distributing this content. I want it back. So you always want to be thinking, again, handshakes are awesome because I value it, because I do believe in you. I want to do everything I can now to protect this and make sure you are safe completely. And then, you know, the person's intentions are completely upfront. If they're willing to protect you and protect your stuff, one, they value themselves, but two, it communicates, okay, you value me, you value my guest contribution, you value whatever. But yeah, it applies. Content is just like money. I should have said that earlier.
No, I didn't even, but I, again, I didn't even think of that. And Gary's saying he's never had a partnership that that problem did not happen. And yeah, I mean, it just, you know, it's, I always say it's puppies and rainbows. You're like, oh, we're going to make so much money. This is so awesome. This is going to be so easy and so great. And then, you know, nitty gritty. And I'm not saying this to be negative, or I'm not saying to discourage, or I don't want this podcast to scare people away. I simply want you to think of things as you're doing this, as you're getting really excited, because when you set these terms and you kind of, you think of the bad and you just lay it all out and you're like, okay, if this happens, let's go there. And if this, and that way, when it happens, you're like, okay, we kind of, you know, we thought this could happen. And so let's figure out what, you know, what did we decide we wanted to do? And it's so much better than when it never was laid out. You didn't talk about it. And then it starts happening. That's when the relationship and the business goes sour faster.
Yeah.
Or if you prepared for it, it's like, okay, this was a bump we kind of thought about. So,
Yeah.
And credit. Credit's another thing. Who's going to take, you know, like Tick's saying, another thing is credit. You have to work with merchants and your credit's going to come into play. Whose credit's going on the line, like for events and stuff? I mean, I know events that cost people hundreds of thousands of dollars. So if that event doesn't go as planned, who's on the line? It's just a very interesting. So I just want people to be aware. That's the whole point of recording this. It's the whole point of bringing Tamsin in. As you're thinking about these things, I mean, I've got a couple people that approached me about, you know, these are actual businesses. And I'm actually thinking about, I'm kind of like Gary, I've been burned a couple times in the partnership. I'm like, but I'm going to step back in it a little bit. But it's, I know now you have to set every expectation you possibly can up front. And that's what's going to save you in the back. So, and just put the contracts in play. When you have an affiliate program, make sure people are complying, because just like the Facebook groups we talked about earlier, you want to be able to pull people out, kick people out if they're not following the rules. And if you don't have rules defined, you can't do that. So it's just so interesting. So Tamsa, as always, thank you. Tell people where they can go and find you. I know you've put your website over in the links here, but please do it again. But for the people listening, where can we go and find you?
Go to launchinglegal.com/Periscope. That's the best place I have to go, because that has, that'll take you wherever you want to go. But launchinglegal.com will then, that's where most people need to go. I do trademarks and more customized stuff at Vujade Law, which is my actual law firm, law business. It's not, it's just me. So it's a business. And that's VujadeLaw.com.
Thanks for listening to the Starters Club podcast, where we have just one mission: to inspire you by talking to ordinary people who are becoming extraordinary entrepreneurs.